I think part of the Chinese anger this weekend was a sign that the Chinese are getting very uncomfortable with the trade war.
Top Chinese and U.S. diplomats air grievances in public. It's Tuesday, October 9th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, how much did the U.S. Secretary of State accomplish in Asia? China detains and investigates the head of Interpol. New Zealand taking security beyond passwords, profiting from animal waste, robot gardeners. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Chinese Foreign Minister and State Councilor Wang Yi aired their grievances in the open Monday during a brief visit to Beijing by Washington's top diplomat amid worsening relations. Pompeo told the foreign minister, "We have a fundamental disagreement," which is unusually blunt language for such a diplomatic setting. Wang accused the U.S. of escalating trade tensions with China and said Washington was dealing with Taiwan in a way that harms China's core interests. Beijing considers the self-ruled island as its own. The meeting comes days after U.S. Vice President Mike Pence delivered a speech accusing China of military aggression, commercial theft, rising human rights violations, and electoral intervention against Trump. Victor Cha, senior advisor at CSIS, the Center for Strategic and International Studies here in Washington, tells VOA Asia's Ira Melman Pence's comments seem to be the catalyst for the Chinese criticism aimed at Pompeo.
It comes on the heels of Vice President Pence's speech last week where, you know, he really laid out a profile of China as a competitor, as a peer competitor of the United States. So I don't think the Chinese would do anything but respond the way they did during Pompeo's visit, which is the first face-to-face high-level meeting after the vice president's speech. I think the Chinese views on Taiwan, I mean, I don't think the Trump administration is doing anything unusual on Taiwan. I mean, they just authorized an arms sale, but previous administrations have authorized arms sales before. And this administration has done freedom of navigation operations in the South China Sea, which almost led to a collision with a Chinese destroyer again last week. But those operations make sense given China's island hopping campaign. The big change really has been on trade, where we are engaged in this outright trade war with China. And I think part of the Chinese anger that Wang Yi displayed this weekend was a sign that the Chinese are getting very uncomfortable with the trade war. And that they always thought, I think, the United States would stop, and that's clearly not what the United States is doing there. The U.S. is escalating.
Well, you know that the U.S. is accusing China of trying to meddle in the upcoming election, saying they would rather have someone else but Donald Trump as president of the United States. How do you react to that?
Well, I think the Chinese are doing stuff, trying to advertise in states that they're trying to flip from Republican to Democrat, particularly grain states. One way of looking at it is that China's playing the game. They're playing the electoral game like most other countries do. On the other hand, for the president, it's very personal, and he was pretty clear about that at the UN Security Council when he gave a speech and basically singled out China to everyone in the world that they were meddling in his elections against his interests. Of course, the president said nothing about Russia and Russia meddling in the elections, but that's a whole other story.
Isn't that, though? Would you agree that right now they've reached a level of, for want of a better term, diplomatic brinksmanship here?
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, I don't, I think the relationship is going to be pretty much on this very confrontational track, at least through the midterm elections, if not longer. It's hard to see that there's going to be any stepping off of the trade disputes now, given where we are. And then, you know, for the U.S., particularly for Trump, I think whether it's right or wrong, I think Trump feels like he's winning the trade war right now because, you know, the U.S. had its best jobs numbers in a long time last week. The stock market continues to reach new heights. And meanwhile, in China, the actions that they're taking seem very defensive. The reported reduced requirement for reserves, currency reserves in banks to try to inject more money into the Chinese economic system, the downturn in both the Shanghai and the Shenzhen composite indices this week, all these suggest that business confidence is at an all-time high in the United States, not so much in China. And this, I think, leads Trump to believe that what he's doing is working, and so he's going to continue on this path.
Is this all political?
No, I think that there are not just for Trump, but mainstream Republicans and probably many Democrats who believe that China is practicing unfair trade practices and stealing technology and things of that nature. So there needs to be some sort of rectification. So I think at the core, there's an issue there that there's actually agreement on by both Democrats and Republicans in the administration. Just the way that Trump is pursuing this is unique. It's very Trump-like.
The short but newsworthy visit to Beijing was the U.S. Secretary of State's last stop on a multi-nation Asian tour. He met with the leaders of Japan and both North and South Korea. Coming up on VOA Asia, Ira Melman continues his talk with Victor Cha about that part of Mike Pompeo's journey. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. The United States and China trade criticism in testy Beijing meeting. China says Interpol chief Meng Hongwei under investigation. Study reveals first big look at Chinese investment in Australia. A second Trump-Kim appears to be closer, experts still await concrete denuclearization steps. And Doctors Without Borders ordered to stop its mental health services on Nauru. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are to be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. As U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo returns from his Asia visit to Japan, North and South Korea, and China, we continue with a conversation between VOA Asia's Ira Melman and Victor Cha, Asian expert and former U.S. diplomat who negotiated with the North Koreans during the last Bush administration. They evaluate Pompeo's accomplishments on the trip.
It's hard to give it a grade. I think they achieved the minimum necessary to argue that the diplomatic momentum is continuing. I guess that's the way I would put it, in the sense that they were what looked like small advances in terms of the denuclearization agenda, which was really the piece that needed to be filled in on this trip, because it's the one for which the administration has received the most criticism in terms of failures of the Singapore summit. So the fact that they appear to have gotten some agreement from the North Koreans to allow verification of the decommissioning of the nuclear test site is the first small, but it's a small but useful step in establishing the norm of verification for denuclearization and for trying to move at least what U.S. core equities in this negotiation, which have been really unaddressed until this point, moving that forward just a little bit.
Well, you just touched on part of my next question, and that is you have had years of experience dealing with the North Koreans and dealing with this situation. Is there anything really new that's coming out of this, or could this all end the way other negotiations have gone?
Well, the interesting thing that we have not seen so far is North Korea's providing of a complete inventory and declaration of all their capabilities that would be verified. The North Koreans have done a lot of things, but they have not done that. And that is, of course, where the last agreement that I participated in 10 years ago broke down. I mean, we did get a freeze at Yongbyon. We did get inspectors in. All of these things that the North is talking about today. But when it came to the actual declaration of all their capabilities and an outside party to verify that, that's where it all broke down. So, I mean, there's a lot of window dressing that's new, including the summit meetings and talk about love letters between the two leaders and things. But at the core, for those of us who've studied this or participated in a long time, the declaration, the complete declaration, and then the verification by the IAEA or other outside experts is really the core piece that will tell us whether there is advancement here from past agreements or whether there is not advancement.
But what do you think North Korea is going to want in return, what they had called considerations?
I think the thing they want right now the most is the lifting of economic sanctions. At the inter-Korean summit last month, the South Koreans put a lot of projects on the table, but none of these can move forward unless there's a lifting of sanctions. So I think that's the thing that they want right now, and probably they hope if they let people into the Punggye-ri test site, the nuclear test site, if they let people in to verify that that's been decommissioned, which will just be a political act because, if anything, they will have cleaned out everything that is suspect in there by the time of that visit. They probably see that as their best and most direct route to getting at least some sanctions lifting.
Victor Cha served as Director for Asian Affairs at the National Security Council from 2004 through 2007 and led the U.S. delegation for the United States at the six-party talks and received two outstanding service awards during his tenure at the White House. Happening now in Asia, protesters rallied in Bali, Indonesia, against the annual meeting of the International Monetary Fund and World Bank to be held in Bali. Citizens are calling for the government to focus their resources on disaster relief instead, following the latest deadly earthquake and tsunami. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy, as always, to have you with us on VOA Asia. China has acknowledged that it is investigating senior official Meng Hongwei, who also headed the global law enforcement agency Interpol, after he was reported missing last week upon his return to his native China. The Beijing-based National Supervisory Commission, which handles corruption cases involving public officials, in a brief statement Sunday said Meng is currently under investigation on suspicion of violating the law. Soon afterwards, France-based Interpol said it received the 64-year-old Meng's resignation with immediate effect. He had been in the post since 2016 and was Interpol's first Chinese leader. Bonnie Glazer, a prominent China expert at the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies, said any international organization should think twice before considering a Chinese candidate to be its head. Gordon Chang, a lawyer, author, and contributor to the Daily Beast website, tells VOA's Victor Beatty this could be part of a struggle within the Chinese Communist Party.
Obviously, there's some intense infighting at the top of the Communist Party, but we don't know the full extent of it. And at this particular time, I think only a small circle in Beijing really knows the story. There are many rumors, but it's going to take quite some time for us to figure out exactly what happened.
China has targeted a number of people. Part of President Xi Jinping's anti-corruption drive, is this part of that?
It could very well be. But the important point here is that because China has blackened its reputation in the international community, it's unlikely to be a run-of-the-mill corruption investigation, because China would not have done this and certainly wouldn't have done it in this fashion. It would seem that this has got to be extremely serious for them to have removed Meng in this particular fashion.
His case was brought under what's called the National Supervisory Commission, which handles corruption cases involving public servants, saying in a one-line statement that Mr. Meng is currently under investigation on suspicion of violating the law. We've seen this before, haven't we?
Well, we certainly have. You know, under Xi Jinping, there has been an unprecedented purge of officials. They say it's anti-corruption, but really what's going on here is Xi Jinping is removing people that he perceives to be a political opponent, because almost all officials in China are corrupt. They're not removed for corruption. They're removed because they're on the wrong side of a political controversy. For instance, we have not seen Xi Jinping move against his family, who have accumulated wealth in an unexplained manner. We have not seen Xi Jinping move against his political allies, but we have seen Xi Jinping put anti-corruption campaigners in jail, which really means that this is not about corruption. It's really about politics. And that's the way Chinese politics are being handled these days.
When Mr. Meng was elected head of Interpol back in 2016, there were some concerns raised that he would use it to help China target dissidents abroad under the guise of pursuing corrupt officials. In fact, during his brief tenure, Interpol issued a red notice for a fugitive Chinese billionaire obviously it seems that the tables have been turned on him.
Well, certainly. And everyone was concerned about how the Chinese would use Interpol. But nobody, certainly not me, expected this turn of events. Because Meng was in such a advantageous position for China, we know this has got to be extremely serious for them to remove him and to do so under the circumstances, which are just extraordinary.
Meng's wife, Grace, told reporters in Lyon she had not heard from her husband since September 25th and revealed that his last text message to her contained a kitchen knife emoji, what she believed to be a sign he is in danger. Coming up, New Zealand wants access to your devices. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA programs. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia, video of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's meeting with U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was broadcast on North Korean public television. Pompeo expects to hold a second summit with the North Korean leader to finalize an agreement to resign their nuclear weapons. Visit VOA Asia Facebook, which has top stories and great features for you to see and share. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, travelers entering New Zealand who refuse to disclose passwords for their digital devices during forced searches could face prosecution and heavy fines. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports, border authorities say the move could be a world first.
Under the new 2018 Customs and Excise Act, officials in New Zealand can force travelers to unlock any electronic device so it can be searched. Anyone who refuses can face prosecution and a fine of more than $3,000. The legislation, which is thought to be the first of its kind anywhere, also gives agents the authority to copy any data on devices they search. The New Zealand government said in a statement that the travelling public is unlikely to notice much difference at the border. The Customs Minister, Chris Farfoy, says the measure will boost national security.
A lot of the organised crime groups are becoming a lot more sophisticated in the ways that they're trying to get things across the border. And if we do think that they're up to that kind of business, then getting intelligence from smartphones and computers can be useful for prosecution.
But the New Zealand Council for Civil Liberties says the new law is a grave invasion of personal privacy. Its chairperson is Thomas Beagle.
Nowadays, we've got everything on our phones. We've got all our personal life. We've got all our doctor's records, our emails, absolutely everything on it. And the customs can take that and keep it.
Customs officers will be able to search any device that gives them a reasonable cause to suspect wrongdoing. In New Zealand, as in other countries, including Australia, customs agents already had the legal power to search and seize digital devices. If there was a suspicion, they contained evidence of criminal activity. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This news from VOA Asia. The Thai youth soccer team, the Wild Boars, who gained international attention after being trapped in a flooded cave for 9 days, were honored at the Summer Youth Olympic Games by the International Olympic Committee. All the big stories come your way on VOA 60 and daily at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, large-scale agriculture creates large-scale pollution, especially from animal waste. The waste from poultry farms, for example, is bad for the environment, but it contains nutrients that are good for fertilizer. Faith Lapidus reports scientists in Maryland are developing a new technology to separate the good from the bad and turn a profit in the process.
Visit Lee Blaney's lab at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, and you'll likely catch a faint whiff of barnyard. It's understandable. The contents of this bucket may look like dirt, but it's actually poultry litter.
Poultry litter is a mixture of poultry manure, just chicken poop, extra feed that may not have been eaten by the birds. It could also be feathers. It could also be some of the soil on the floor of the poultry houses.
That litter contains nutrients like nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, which plants need to grow. In fact, many farmers use poultry litter from their chicken houses to fertilize crops. And that's where the problem starts. Runoff from fields carries excess nutrients into rivers and lakes. Too many nutrients in the water feed algal blooms, which suck up oxygen. That, in turn, causes dead zones and massive fish kills. So, if it doesn't go onto the fields, what's a farmer to do with all that litter?
Poultry litter is a waste stream that currently we're kind of just throwing a lot of great nutrients and other resources away.
In Blaney's view, the solution is recycling. With support from the National Science Foundation, he and his team have developed technology to extract the nutrients so they can be sold.
And so what we're trying to do here is really a win because we're protecting the environment and we're also generating a potentially new revenue stream for farmers.
To do that, they make a poultry litter slurry and pump it through these tanks. They add acid and carbon dioxide, which pull the nutrients into the water. They separate out the leftover runny solids, which look like, well, you know.
Then we take that water, we bubble air through it, and we add some base and we bump the pH back up. When we get to around pH 9, we're actually able to precipitate a molecule called struvite.
Struvite is a valuable slow-release fertilizer that farmers could then sell. And those leftover solids, they're still rich in carbon. Farmers can spread it on their fields to help the soil hold more nutrients and water. The result is a win-win-win for farmers, consumers, and the environment. Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
All those nutrients in the ground can produce good things to eat, and Americans are hungry for fresh organic produce in their homes, and in many cases, in the latest farm-to-table trend, they're willing to pay more for it. But in an urban setting, residents don't have a farm next door. VOA's Kevin Enix tells us the company Iron Ox is looking to change that with the help of robust robotics.
This is the farmer at California-based Iron Ox Industries. This robotic arm keeps its artificial intelligence eyes on these greens.
At Iron Ox, we built the first production robotic farm. And what that means is we're using robotics and AI to grow better produce and make it more accessible to everybody.
And this is Argus. Argus is responsible for moving the plants from plot to plot, making sure each plant has enough space to grow.
We have a 1,000-pound mobile robot, lovingly named Angus, that navigates our farm autonomously, picks up one of these hydroponic grow modules, and then brings them over to this robotic arm. And then the robotic arm uses things like computer vision, and it can actually see in 3D. So it looks at the module, knows where the plants are, and it does whatever the task is, like harvesting or transplanting.
You can't see the red coloration
yet. It is really a fairly simple plant. The team plants lots of seedlings, and as they grow, they get more space. And that is where Iron Ox engineers say their robotic systems really shine.
We pack the lettuce and herbs in as closely as we can, but as they get bigger, we actually scale them out and space them apart. And that's called transplanting. Other farms do that, but it's a tedious, repetitive task today, whereas our robots are doing it every day, all day.
The result is an easily scalable farm.
Yeah, this is green
in
soil,
an urban setting that Iron Ox is looking to expand all across the United States.
Right now we're focused on business to business, selling product to local chefs and restaurants, serving the local community, as well as donating a portion of our produce to local food banks. As we start to grow, we are looking at doing nationwide coverage and building farms outside of every major city to better serve them very local, high-quality produce.
Similar labs have been tried and abandoned, but Iron Ox is hoping to prove that these kinds of startups can be successful. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. With so many ways to hear our program and download it, you can hear VOA Asia just about any time you like. iTunes and SoundCloud are a great place to find our program, as is Facebook at VOA Asia, and we also stream on our website at voanews.com. You can hear us on the radio as well. Radioactive at Temasek Polytechnic in Singapore is one station that carries our program. We thank everyone there who's tuned in. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer Zineb Abdel-Rahman. our managing editor, Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.